Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio for March the 14th, 2020. I say all of those things because I have to remind myself where I am and what I'm doing. Spent the last couple of weeks in Oaxaca, Mexico, on a deep dive into the mezcal pool. And there's a show coming shortly with one of the few female mezcal masters in all of Mexico. Her name is Sosima Olivera, and she is with Fancancini Mezcal Cooperative and makes amazing mezcal. One of the last I tasted had been in a large jar for 8 years. So we'll talk mezcal making in Mexico and being a female surrounded by males there. And being a female in a very male-dominated business. And then being in Oaxaca, I missed for the first time in 12 years the Vancouver International Wine Festival. So I thought I'd do a follow-up. And the guests for this show are Christine Coletta, the co-founder of Okanagan Crushpad, Harry Hershick, the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. He'll give us a wrap-up. Michelle Bouffard will give us a sense of the feature region this year, which was France. And she will talk about her panel and the conversations she had on climate change and the wine industry. We finish with one of the great winemakers in all of France, specifically Château Neuf-du-Pape, Bernard Dusenier from Domaine Dusenier. And before I set this in motion, I just want to let you know that we have interviews coming up with Chef Lee Cooper from L'Abattoir. We're going to visit Untapped and Swirl in Parksville. And down the road, Derek Gray, the executive chef and co-partner at Row 14 in the Similkameen Valley. We're also coming up to our annual conversation with all of the winemakers at Okanagan Falls, who will be pouring in Vancouver. And Locals Only will be in Vancouver. That's a great group of winemakers, brewers, distillers from Vancouver Island and the Gulf Islands, and they head into Vancouver. All right, here we go. Let's look back at the annual Vancouver Wine Festival and talk about lots of other things as well. Enjoy. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Whether you're a wine enthusiast or just getting acquainted with Unsworth Vineyards, you are invited to join the Unsworth Wine Club. Membership gives you exclusive access to their collection of limited production wines and many benefits throughout the year. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. She is Christine Coletta, and I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. You are you're going to meet some friends at a pub. It's a week in what the hell?
Yes, I'm in beautiful Summerland right now, but I'm getting ready to jet off and go over to Europe, where we're going to be selling some Okanagan wine.
It feels like about 5 years ago when you first went over to London. Is it longer than that now?
I believe it is a little bit longer than that, and it's interesting because the first time I went, I really sort of felt like a duck out of water. And now when I go, I know people. People recognize me. They're looking forward to seeing the new vintages that I'm bringing of wines that they're now familiar with. It really does take a while.
It does, doesn't it?
It takes persistence. Yes, and you have to go. You can't just go to the market once a year or go once every few years and expect that people are going to remember you or get interested in what you're doing. I actually go several times a year, and it might sound excessive, but that's really what you need to do. And London is the place where it all happens, and it's the center. And from there, you sort of pop out and pick off some other markets.
I'll use the royal we here. Were we an oddity when we first got there?
No, there were a few people that had been forging forward before us. I must say Jack Meyer and the team there. The folks at Quail's Gate had been doing some work in the market. And obviously my good friend John Skinner with Painted Rock. So there were a few people that were doing some work in that market. Now there's more and more. And so when we go to the annual Canada House tasting in May, there's quite a few people from British Columbia. And I'm surrounded by good company, which is great.
And where are you going on this journey?
This year, I'm going to London. I'm going then to Oslo. I'm going to the International Oslo Wine Festival. Then I'll be going to Dusseldorf to Provine. Then I'm going off to Geneva, then back to London.
What did you pour? So, what did you pour in those first couple of years, and what did they take to, and what do you take now?
Well, it's interesting because I took things that I was very excited about that people in British Columbia loved, such as our Haywire Switchback Pinot Gris. And Pinot Gris is really sort of a down market product in the UK. And what they got really excited about was our Haywire Vintage Bub, our Gamay, our Pinot Noir, and they absolutely adore our Seacrest Chardonnay, which is done in concrete tanks. Love our natural wines, our freeform line, and things like that. Cabernet Franc is also something that goes over really, really well in the UK, and I think a lot of people from a lot of the Canadian producers are seeing a lot of interest in Cab Franc. So very interesting. What I originally took with me was not really what they got excited about.
Okay. Did you say you took the Freeform 2018 Vingris?
I have taken that, yes. They absolutely adore that, and also the Freeform Cabernet Franc.
And did you take the Haywire Garnet Valley Ranch, the Pinot Noir?
I haven't taken that yet. I am going to be taking that. I thought it was early days and it was a young wine, so I will be taking that on my next trip.
Okay. Now, you must have settled production because that's going to require even more shipping of product around the world.
It's tiny amounts. It really isn't a lot. I do like to say that I can actually personally consume more than those markets. But it's important because really you get the kind of feedback that you need in order to help you elevate your game and improve what you're doing. So for me, it's a very important small amount, 200 or 300 cases here and there. We actually had our Haywire Gamay at the Norwegian Monopoly, which was very exciting to go into a liquor store there and see it on the shelf. So it's nice. It's nice to get that international recognition. It's good to see your wines on shelves next to wines that I love, like the Love Block Pinot Gris from our friends Erica and Kim Crawford. We were on the shelf next to them, and it just in a shop that I saw in London. It's really exciting to see that.
I was not at the Vancouver Wine Festival 2020. How was the experience? I mean, the French were there. Did you get a chance to taste around?
I did, and you know, it was interesting because I have really not spent a lot of time. Obviously, when you're a wine producer, you sort of really sort of drill down into your own little region and get all about that. And then when I do go to different markets, I tend to explore different styles. So I've been, really sort of getting my head around like low intervention wines. So French wines in the category of lower intervention, and I haven't really spent a lot of time in the French category. So it was very exciting to see lots of interest there. And, of course, it's always great for me to spend time with my fellow BC winemakers. So I enjoy seeing them there, too. It was a good event. It was as always. And I keep saying, isn't this going to be my last? Aren't I getting a little long in tooth?
I saw a number go by, 65?
Uh-huh. Yes, I had a big birthday this year.
So what do you want to do when you grow up? What's?
People keep asking me that question. There's no sign of retirement. That certainly got put to bed when we started the winery years ago. Yeah. But I think, I've got another 5 years of solid work in front of me.
Okay.
And lots of challenges. Things I'm excited to do. So no plans to slow down.
Christine Coletta, Okanagan Crest Pad on the line, Tasting Room Radio, TD Mulligan. I know that you're concerned with, and you're always being asked to answer the question about challenges up ahead, not only for yourself and for Summerland and your area, but for the Okanagan in particular. What are the big challenges straight in front of us? Climate?
I think climate is challenging. I think if you're a jaded farmer, you're going to say that climate is a challenge every year because it's always, Mother Nature presents us with something every year. I think water. I think water is going to become a big issue here for us. I think we're going to have to learn to conserve it and be prudent. I think organic farming, I think being, you know, good caretakers of the land is going to be something that we're going to have more and more pressure being put on us to do that. As you know, we're already sort of leading the forefront on that agenda item. And I just think as an industry, we're going to have to step up collectively on that. Grape growing, grape supply, small wineries are trying to grow. And the number one thing that they're all looking for is a good, reliable source of grapes. Very challenging because the price of land is so dear right now. So I think those are the main things. It really is about getting your reliable source of grapes and being able to grow your production.
Growers, my goodness.
Yes.
I was astonished for the first time I heard how many wineries there were in the Okanagan and how many growers there were. It was like I had no idea. Are they still speaking with a single voice, or is it still a Wild West Dodge City kind of situation?
Very much Wild West, and there's so many small growers and so many small wineries, and it's relationship to relationship. So if one of those growers gets purchased or a winery gets purchased, all of those relationships change. So challenging times for people. Really challenging.
I have a couple of personal items here. First of all, you remember the very first sommelier for that sommelier of the year who won the campus first wine, I think, that was ever put out by you guys. And it was Curtis Colt.
Yes.
And it was his Semillon.
Yes.
I have one bottle.
Mm.
How long can it stay on the shelf?
I think I'd crack it open.
Okay.
Yeah, we had one not long ago, and it was lovely.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are Bizu and Yukon?
They are fabulous. I was up there yesterday. They're getting a little antsy in their winter barn. Everybody's at this time of year, they want to get back out into the vineyards. Every day, I take them down to a paddock and give them a good run. But they're wonderful. They're lovely dogs, and they've done a great job of protecting the sheep over the winter.
Great Pyrenees, right?
They are beautiful, yes. Great Pyrenees, they are gorgeous.
Have you seen a documentary called The Greatest Little Farm?
I have. I love it. I just cry every time I see it. And then I say to Steve, I want another Great Pyrenees puppy. And he's like, I'm leaving.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I can't imagine what you thought of that film as it went by.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh. And you know, it's very dear to me because the fellow who was the consultant working with them was also the fellow that worked with us to help us start our
project. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you did invest in that film.
Yes, I did. Yes, it brings me to tears. It really does. Everyone has to go watch it. It's fabulous.
I can't keep up with your awards, but the last one I saw go by was one of the wine industry's most inspiring people, 2020, from Wine Industry Advisor. Do you get a trophy?
I didn't. No, but my daughter likes to give me awards, too.
Okay.
More most annoying mother. Every time I get something like that, she counterbalances it just to keep sure that my ego is in check. And, you know, she'll give me something like really annoying pain in the backside, mother.
Okay.
So,
last question. 2020 is stretched out in front of us. Is there anything particularly you want to tell us about that you're looking forward to? That because people are making plans now as to when they would head for the Okanagan.
I think you should come and see us this year if you like our little tasting room and you've never been there. All I'm going to say is that this will be your last chance to go visit that little tasting room.
Will some of us get up to the Garnet Valley?
Maybe, but it's not. We have no plans to make that open to the public. We're thinking of taking people up there on Friday mornings for a tour.
Okay.
But we will probably, it probably will not be open to the public on a regular basis. But I'll be very coy and say, If you have not been to the winery as you know it, you will have to come this year. It will be your last chance.
Okay, I have to go and talk to Harry Hershick now and see how he did. Thank you for talking to us. It's still the website, the Facebook, tweeting, Instagram, everything, Okanagan Crush Pad.
Okanagan Crush Pad. You got it. Yes.
Thank you.
Take care.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Whether you're a wine enthusiast or just getting acquainted with Unsworth Vineyards, you are invited to join the Unsworth Wine Club. Membership gives you exclusive access to their collection of limited production wines and many benefits throughout the year. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. It's going to be an amazing 2020 at The Hatch. A new location for Crown and Thieves will open in the summer. The Hatching Post Microbrewery and Black Swift Vineyards in the spring. So what is Black Swift Vineyards? Single vineyards. Small lots of Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot, and Syrah. It's like The Hatch wearing a tuxedo. There'll be a tasting room and a patio. And it'll be the home of both Black Swift and Screaming Frenzy. All the details might be found at thehatchwines.com. Harry Hershick is the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. And he has earned the right to not take phone calls, or block his phone, or just basically turn the phone off and go somewhere warm or wonderful or quiet or whatever, because the Vancouver Wine Festival is done like dinner, as Tiger Williams would say. Again, Harry, it's always a blur, but then you remember certain things. The profile of the Vancouver Wine Festival, has it ever been higher as it is now around the world?
First off, I just want to say I'm taking your calls, Terry.
Thank you.
It is a blur. You know, sometimes I say that organizing the wine festival, where we had 59 events, is like organizing 59 weddings. And, you know, the build-up to a wedding is like, you know, it's such a big thing. You can't even imagine it's going to happen because, like, the bride and groom are there. In our case, our brides and grooms are the principals, the winemakers, the owners that are coming from all over the world to be at the festival. And then you're in it, and you can't imagine anything being anywhere else. But, you know, in that magical moment of being at a wedding or being at some of our events. And then when it's all over, it's just like going off a cliff. And but you get those memories for life. And we had over 25,000 people attend and participate and pour their wines and volunteer and raise funds for Bard on the Beach Shakespeare Festival. And I think one thing that always crystallizes in my mind is that everyone who comes to the festival essentially has a slightly different experience because they're going to taste a different collection of wines. Sure. Not everyone tastes exactly the same wines. And the number one reason people come is to discover new wines. And I'm just, you know, even though all these wines exist on spreadsheets before the festival and we're selecting 1,400 wines and 30,000 bottles and all that, that's all spreadsheet stuff. It always amazes me that when you're actually at the festival and you see the wines from the different regions, and this year was France, whether, you know, they were from the Loire Valley or Alsace or Rhone or Bourgogne or Bordeaux, and I'm just amazed that it's tasting the wines actually what speaks to me and speaks to the attendees. It's not just those wines on a spreadsheet. And just an amazing experience to go through. And we had more than ever hosted more sommeliers from around the world. Mm. Nina Jensen was here from Denmark. She's a Danish champion. She finished second in the world.
Wow.
Pierre Alexis Soulier was here from Montreal. He won the Best Sommelier of the Americas. We hosted somms from Mexico and the States. And really, you know, the wine world is here. And to see the mingling of the out-of-towners with the locals, I know it sounds like a kaleidoscopic snapshot, but I think the profile is higher because we're able to work with our partners, Tourism Vancouver, Delta Airlines, Stay Vancouver Hotels, to host these people show them what a great city we have. No, you don't need parkas in Vancouver at the end of February.
Here, have a daffodil. Harry Hershick is the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's what I liked. I liked the profile of Croatia. We're going to see more and more of them, obviously, as they get into the country, because they've always been making wine there, of course. Portugal, I'd love them to be even better marketers than they currently are. Romania showed up. Spain showed up. Uruguay showed up. And it's nice to see our friends from the United States. I just wish we'd see more Washington wines and more Oregon wines. They're part of the Cascadia profile.
Yeah, well, you had some representatives up from Washington and Oregon visiting the festival. They'd like to get more involved. The slight barrier is that the price of those really high-quality wines, once they cross the border into our market, are fairly premium priced.
Yeah.
And there's quite a loyalty in the market here for BC wines. And we felt that that loyalty and competitiveness when Canada was the theme a couple of years ago and how people felt towards Ontario wines. And but it's, you know, it's really our regional terroir. If you take away the political boundaries, I mean, the wines of Oregon, Washington, the Okanagan all have one thing in common. They're all part of the Columbia River river basin.
Sure.
So if you take the political boundaries away, there's a lot of commonality geographically between these wines that we should, you know, I wish we could celebrate more at the festival.
I think, you know, and we've talked about this before, that Charlie Pilateri, a wonderful Niagara winemaker, has told me on this show, he said, we're not going to send Ontario wines to British Columbia. You guys are locals. You drink everything that you grow there. You're not interested in Ontario. Is that changing, do you think?
Well, one thing that's really exciting, it's been, you know, years in the making. This has took a lot of effort, but we had a couple of master classes this year, Discover Canadian Pinot Noir, during part of the trade program, and then BC No Place Like It afterwards. But what's exciting about Discover Canadian Pinot Noir is that we had, for the very first time at the wine festival, a wine from Quebec.
There you go.
And in the seminar, there were wines from Nova Scotia, Quebec, Ontario, and, of course, B.C., Okanagan, Cowichan Valley. And so even though those wines weren't at winery tables in the main tasting room, part of my motivation to bring all those wines across Canada is because we need to do that at Canada's premier wine show. And these influencers and somms that we're hosting, and we hosted nearly 20 of them from across Canada and around the world, when they come to Vancouver, they don't care about regional rivalries. The first thing they ask me is, hey, do you have some Canadian wine I can taste? They don't go, oh, can I taste some BC wine? Because I know you guys don't like to drink Ontario wines. They don't care about those rivalries.
Yeah.
And we make too much of a big deal. You know, the subway from the airport's called Canada Line. It's not called West Coast Line, British Columbia. It's called Canada Line. You go to Canada Place.
Easy, easy.
We should have some Canadian wine. Anyway, that it really made me, I felt great that we could have those wines tasted by some of the top somms around the world in Vancouver.
Harry Hershick is the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. What I really liked as well, Harry, was that there were some 30 Canadian wineries there. I mean, it wasn't their turn to be in the spotlight, but they still showed up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just get in the car and come here. I mean, the growth and the stature of Okanagan wines just goes up and up. BC wines and all, and yeah, there's just a huge demand from BC wineries because for them, this is the closest international show. You know, it's they have lots of other local tastings around the year, but this is a big deal. They're going to the international show. We don't play favorites with BC wineries.
Yeah,
we treat all wineries equally at the wine festival.
Now, two things for the consumer and the listener. When should they start, if they end up not getting into events, and it's handed down from generation to generation, when should you start taking an interest and getting your tickets? You want to just set the alarm bell in your head.
Beginning of November for the tasting room, and then first Wednesday in January for special events. So we released the brochure and event details online middle of December.
Okay.
So you know what? It's a great thing to do as an annual tradition. If you have a couple of days off at between Christmas and New Year's, get on the computer and check out vanwinefest.ca and make some plans, you know, whether it's, you know, a free ticket with a hotel room or we come to Vancouver and enjoy the festival at the end of February. I'm really excited about next year's theme.
Harry Hershick is the executive director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Yeah, it was good. Listen, I just wanted to say, what do we prepare for 2021, Harry?
It's the first time in our 43-year history we're not doing a theme region.
Ah.
We're not doing a theme country. We're doing a theme continent.
What are you going to do?
South America.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we're going to Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, maybe Brazil, but also really talking about South American culture, Latin American culture, food, flavors, pizzazz, tango, you know, just going to have a party with South America because, you know, Canada, we're in America, like North America and South America, we're going to celebrate the Americas. You know, our way, not just that other country that seems to dominate.
On our walk this morning, Meg and I were talking about a Viognier that we had from Chile. And I said, I cannot believe the effect that the Chile Sauv Blancs had. How long ago was that? 5, 6, 7 years ago when they were the feature region along with Argentina?
Argentina was co-theme with New Zealand in 2010.
But Chile showed up 1 year.
Two years later in 2012.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it was astonishing how great the Sauv Blancs were. They were Sauv Blancs that we had never tasted before. And it was fabulous. So they can come back anytime they want.
Yeah. Especially from Leda Valley. And one of the themes from an educational point of view, you know, it's all about altitude, latitude, and attitude in South America, you know, because of the Andes Mountains and how high can you go to grow grapes, and particularly in Chile, you know, it's both also altitude, but also, you know, how far south, where it's cooler, can you go grapes, and also proximity to the ocean, like the Sauv Blancs you mentioned, from Leda Valley, really close to the ocean. Just, it's magical.
And finally, what goes around comes around. Did you get a chance to see the Bart on the Beach production of As You Like It?
Yes, I did.
It's currently playing in Edmonton at the Citadel Theater. It's a huge success. You know, it's the hippie 60s in Kitsilano and 25 Beatles songs. It's absolutely fantastic production. And it all started at Bart on the Beach. And those were the very people that you were raising your money for.
Yeah, it's been a great partnership. And I was managing the Vancouver Fringe Theater Festival when Bard first started, just over 30 years ago. And so I've had a long relationship with Bard, known Christopher Gaze for a long time, seen his shows, and, you know, the growth in the company artistically, financially, the village, it's remarkable. And to think that the Wine Festival started in 1979 with just one event, it's just great to see wine and theater be embraced so much in Vancouver. It's a great thing.
Have yourself a wonderful summer. Do all those trips that people say, hey, come on and enjoy, and just enjoy yourself, and then we'll see you in the fall.
Yeah, I'm going to pay some bills. I'm looking forward to the International Cool Climate Symposium in Ontario in July. That's where I'm going.
Thank you, Harry.
Thanks, Terry.
Harry Hershick, the Executive Director of the Vancouver International Wine Festival. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. It's going to be an amazing 2020 at The Hatch. A new location for Crown and Thieves will open in the summer. The Hatching Post Microbrewery and Black Swift Vineyards in the spring. So what is Black Swift Vineyards? Single vineyards, small lots of Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot, and Syrah. It's like The Hatch wearing a tuxedo. There'll be a tasting room and a patio. And it'll be the home of both Black Swift and Screaming Frenzy. All the details might be found at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Believe it or not, if you go to the Road 13 website, they already have listed their events for 2020.
the dinners with Backyard Farm, the bubbles and crepes, cheesy weekend, crab boil, the bubbles and barbecue, the harvest barbecue, and the days that the wienery truck shows up. It's all there. Make your plans at road13vineyards.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. And yes, I was in Oaxaca, Mexico, when the annual Vancouver Wine Festival took place. Timing? Yeah, it's all about timing. However, the result of that trip will be forthcoming, and I'll explain as we go. But basically, I was able to spend time with a mezcal master, one of the few women in all of Mexico making mezcal, even tequila for that matter. And I thought it was important that I talk to her. Her name was Sosima Oliveira. And that's coming in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to take me a while to recover and just sort of figure out what she said, because, you know, she's speaking Spanish. Anyway, all of that aside, this program is about what I missed. What did I miss at this year's Vancouver Wine Festival? I knew the French were coming, of course. And I also knew that Michel Buffard was coming. First of all, France was the feature region. You must have been just in heaven walking around.
I go to France a lot. I do live in Montreal, but I go to France a lot. I think right now, I have to say, I feel for the producers in Europe when you look at what's going around the world with the terrification in the United States. You look at Brexit, you look at the coronavirus. If you are a producer in Europe right now, like France, it's tough time. And I was pleased to see France honored for many, many reasons. Of course, I'm a huge lover of the country. But also, I think in a time like this, you know, a country like France does need a bit of push and love.
They what are their challenges, and what do you see changes in the wines that they're producing currently?
It's interesting. You know, it's hard to make a big generalization, because I think that, you know, if you speak about Bordeaux versus Burgundy, already it's a very different story versus the south of France. So I think it's so wide. If we start with climate change in regards to France, I think that we've seen regions like the Loire Valley, like Champagne, like Burgundy, who've been suffering very much so from hail, from frost. In some years, some producers barely made any wines. So that's, you know, a financial struggle. If you're a small producer and you're facing a situation where you're not going to make much wine, it is a bit scary. So that's definitely something that some of the regions are facing. On the other hand, you look at Bordeaux, where, you know, this year they've allowed for the first time to, you know, producer to experiment with other grapes in the blend.
Yes.
To face climate change. So I think they continue to seduce markets around the world. But if you look at it, the most important market for France is the UK, the US, and China. Mm. Well, no, looking at what's happening in the world with, you know, the war with Trump, with the Brexit, and with China, it's a bit difficult. And I think what France needs to do is to seduce the French again. They're a local market. I mean, it's interesting. We look at BC, of course, it's a much smaller production. But in British Columbia, we support our local producers. If you look at France, people are drinking less and less. And people who drink, the majority are above 65 years old. So most of the French wines actually consume abroad. So I think that France is facing an interesting time where I do think that they need to reach out to the younger generation to market to them locally, but also find maybe some new markets as well to seduce other markets.
Michel Buffard is on the line from Montreal, and we're going to talk about climate change and wine because that's what the industry is talking about right now. And I know that those of you who walk into a store, walk into a wine shop, your local wine shop, and you may not think about these things. You just look for the labels, look for your favorite,
and go home. But the rest of the industry, this is all they are talking about. They're consumed by it because they have to. This is their life. This is their generations of families have been making this wine, and they have to deal with, as Michelle pointed out, packaging, transport, extremes in temperature, water usage, tips for consumers on how to buy wine with lower carbon footprints. It's a huge thing. Which of those subjects was the one that kept coming back to you?
Well, two things. I think from the producer's point of view, it's a bit different. If you're a small producer, sometimes you just don't know where to start. You want to make a difference. You don't know where to start. When I did the conclusion of the tasting of the climate change symposium on the Wednesday, I said, you know, it doesn't matter where you are in the supply chain. You know, we all have a responsibility. I think at the end of the chain is the sommelier often who are in touch, or there's someone in the wine shop.
Sure.
Who are the people recommending to consumer? Because if people in the industry are lost, imagine the consumer trying to make sense of it and trying to decide, okay, I want to buy a bottle that is good for the environment. What should I think about? And I think that, you know, alone, packaging and transportation is about two-thirds of the carbon footprint of a bottle of wine.
Wow.
So for consumers, something as easy as, you know, I always say, we think about this for food. When we buy food, we tend to look of where the food came from, and we
exactly.
try to buy local ingredients, right? So try to do the same thing. For those of you who are on social media, a producer like Torres, who's really been at the forefront of investing in reducing the carbon footprint and showing the way to the wine industry. So far, Miguel Torres has invested 15 million euro in research on how the wine industry can reduce its carbon footprint. And he's sharing this information by having an affiliation with other producers. And if you go to his website, or if you go to the Jackson family website,
right.
they're working together, you will see steps that they're taking to reduce the carbon footprint. So as a consumer or as a sommelier, you can think about those things before purchasing a bottle of wine, because it's complicated, and we don't always think about all of the things that can affect it. It's a lot more complicated than saying, I'm going to buy organic or biodynamic. I don't care if you're biodynamic. If you're selling me your bottle of wine in a bottle that's a kilo in weight, I won't buy it, you know? So it's all those things that we need to really start to look at. And I think that a lot of people want to make a difference. They're not aware of it. Until we educate and we talk about it, that's the way to go.
Michelle Bouffard, by the way, speaking eloquently from Montreal. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. When is your next symposium?
It's in 2021. So I do it every 2 years because I do it all by myself. And it's a lot of work to gather the top experts from around the world to come to Montreal and speak about it. In November, we have 13 speakers. The symposium was 8 hours long. And by the way, if you're curious about what we talked about, you can view the symposium for free. If you go to tastingclimatechange.com, there's 7 hours of symposium free that you can watch.
Tasting Climate Change Symposium.
tastingclimatechange.com.
So Michelle, I have Michelle Bouffard, by the way, on the phone from Montreal. How is this showing itself in the BC wine industry?
The two things that worries me about BC personally are the fires.
Right.
That keeps on happening. That's very, very difficult. Water, we're okay now because we have a big lake. But, as water becomes more scarce, we're going to want that water for agriculture and food and for drinking. Canada is a precious place for water, and the world knows it.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, when I look down to the future, that's what worries me about BC is smoke taint, fires, and water. I think that's and the extremes of temperature for sure. Because of course, when it's too hot, the vine shuts down and it stops ripening.
Will the next generation even be remotely interested in wine?
Yeah, we need to seduce the young generation. They're drinking less and less, and they like low alcohol wine when they drink. But I don't know. I'm an eternal optimistic, Terry. I think wine is a very authentic product. It's close to core value of family, of agriculture. And if you look also, it's interesting because they're seeing the younger generation are drinking less wine. But when you look at what the anthropologists are saying about the millennials, they're saying that they also people that are closer to authenticity and I think wine, if you market properly to them, I think it will bring it home, I really think. And I think they're the way of the future. So I think we have a part to do in the wine industry to really connect with those younger generation to make wine appealing again to them.
And I actually agree with you. I know it's going to be a tough challenge. Finally, what did you taste? Here's the big thing. What did you taste this year that you talked about? You wrote the name down. You said, I have to remember this and pass it on. What were your highlights from the Vancouver Wine Festival this year?
Well, you know, I know that I'm going to talk about France in a second, but I have to say, Terry, that I was just so impressed again on the quality of wines from Canada. One of the seminars that I went to was really interesting. The question was, should Pinot Noir be the flagship grape of Canada? Should we really market regions, or should we just go out there and market Canada and maybe have a flagship grape? And so that seminar was all about Pinot Noir from Nova Scotia, Quebec, Ontario, and BC. Two of my really, really coup de cœur, as we say in French, was I love the Bloomington Estate Winery. They make a Pinot Noir, and that is from Nova Scotia. We know Nova Scotia more for their sparkling wine, and I love the sparkling wine they make, of course. But that was just light and fresh and crunchy and vibrant and really pure. And it was low alcohol, too. It was 12.5%. And I was thinking, you know, this is a way to, again, with that trend of drinking lighter and lower alcohol, this wine was just so beautiful. You put it in your fridge and you chill it slightly. Loved it.
Yep, 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. The other wine that really blew me away, and it's, you know, we were all happy when we learned that Thomas Batchelder was going to make the wines again from Le Clos Jardin in Ontario. And the 2017 Le Clos Jardin Pinot Noir 20-mile bench was just beautiful. The Bloomington is beautiful. It's a bit more simple. The Clos Jardin has complexity and depth. And I think the oak right now stands out a little bit. It just needs time to integrate. I think this bottle of wine in 2 to 3 years from now will just be stellar. It was perfect. It was just the right balance between fruit, alcohol was integrated, and again, purity of fruit with violets and strawberries. And I was so impressed by that wine, really. It was a big, really, really charming Pinot. Go out there and look for it. For me, those two Pinot were definitely a wine I love. And from BC, definitely, perhaps, the top wine of the flight for me was from BC, the Morin Estate Winery, the Reserve Pinot Noir 2018. Mm-hmm. Great chalky with purity of fruit again, and too easy to drink. Way too easy to drink.
Oh, that's a dangerous thing.
Go Canada, go. I'm just so proud to be Canadian. And as much as I love French wine, I think Canada has come such a long way. And I think this seminar really proved it again. I know that you want me to share a few love from France, so I will. For me, the star of the lineup was definitely the Riesling from Bügel & Fis, the Estate Riesling 2016 for $46. I know that we talk about Riesling a lot in the trade. We always hope that the consumer will embrace it more. This wine was dry. It was tangy. It was complex. It had depth. And I was just thinking, you know, you can serve it with so many things. I was thinking of as quiche. I was thinking of sushi. I was thinking of duck. So many things. And it just reminded me why we need to share the love of Riesling, fuller-bodied style of Riesling from Alsace, but very dry, a spine like a ballerina, and stunning.
All right. This is fantastic, because I knew once we set this in motion, it would become memorable. And those of you listening on podcast, this is what it's like to talk to someone who's an educator, who's a wine lover. She is Michelle Bouffard, certified sommelier, certified educator, passionate about wine and people, author, journalist, instructor, and speaker, and founder of Tasting Climate Change. Is there a website we can send people to there?
Yeah, tastingclimatechange.com.
How about that?
Easy.
On Twitter, at Michelle B. Wine. On Instagram, Michelle Bouffard. On Facebook, Michelle Bouffard.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Thank you for doing this, Michelle. I appreciate it so much. I'm sorry I wasn't there. However, I feel I was there. Through your words. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thanks to you. It was a pleasure to be on the radio show.
This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry Riven Mulligan. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Believe it or not, if you go to the Road 13 website, they already have listed their events for 2020. The dinners with Backyard Farm, the Bubbles and Crepes, Cheesy Weekend, Crab Boil, the Bubbles and Barbecue, the Harvest Barbecue, and the days that the Wienery truck shows up. It's all there. Make your plans at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by two new sponsors. The award-winning Orofino Vineyards, check out their Passion Pit wines, and Orofino Vineyards Suites, voted best in the Similkameen Valley. And the Similkameen Valley's new Row 14 restaurant at Clippers, not just raising the bar in cost and cuisine, it's defining it. It's also the home of Untangled Cidery and Clippers Guest Suites. You can find them online at row14.ca and orofinovineyards.com. Bernard Dusenier has joined me here in the studio, which in fact is the second floor check-in at the Pan Pacific Hotel, and he is here for the annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. You have been here before, have you?
I was here last year, actually, as a visitor, and I was quite impressed by the event.
I mean, you see a lot of wine festivals in your travels. What makes this any different from Paris?
Very different, because actually there are, in Europe there are different types of events, and most of the events I'm participating are more dedicated to professionals. Yep. So it's very rare to have kind of mixture between the professionals and individual people, amateur. I thought it was very unique here. And I was also impressed by the enthusiasm of people and the crowd and the enthusiasm about wine.
Do New World wine fans from this part of the country, do they ask different questions? Are they looking for different answers to their wine questions?
No, it's not really. It's funny to see that a lot of people around the world now are amateur of wine, and they're all very passionate about how it's made, and how we work organically or biodynamically, the way we farm our land. And I think there is very common from people maybe living in a city, that they're curious about how wine is made, and it's very often the same questions coming up. Yeah.
Your parents were growing in Algeria and living there, and when it was a French colony, and then everything changed in the 60s, and they, why did they choose where they decided to plant? Why that area?
I think they didn't want to go too far away from the Med, because they were, you know, across the sea. It was the same kind of climate.
Had they been growing there?
Well, they were growing wine, vineyard there. And also, I think they joined a community of Pieds Noirs. Pieds Noirs meaning French from Algeria. They all came back to the mainland after Algeria became independent in 1962. And they wanted to stay in their community. And many people established and settled down in the south of France. But actually, my father was had made a very, very clever choices in terms of where to plant the vineyard.
Yeah.
And he picked actually the slopes facing north.
At altitude.
Which was very unusual at the time.
Yeah.
And at the time, the hillside was not planted. People prefer to stay across the along the river.
On the left bank.
Yeah, along the river where it's flat and easier to work. But he picked the slopes because he knew that it was the quality on the slopes, and he faced north because he picked up this
cooler
orientations. And actually, we realized 30 years ago that he made a great decision.
Did they think he was crazy then?
Yes, people was. Was a bit surprised, and it was a weird decision at the time, but very wise.
But he was passionate, and he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing because he was already working in vineyard in Algeria in a very hot climate and dry and poor soil, where the Grenache likes to grow.
Bernard Dusseigneur has joined me here in the studio. It's a second floor check-in at the Pan Pacific Hotel, and he is here for the annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. Your brother took over, and he headed for the left bank, if I remember my notes correctly. In the meantime, you became not a left banker or a right banker, you became a banker.
Yeah, exactly.
You just walked away from it.
Yeah, actually, I didn't see my father very much when I was a kid and a teenager, because he worked so hard. He rebuilt the estate, the family estate in France, and at the age of 45, with no money and two young kids. So actually, I had quite a twisted image of the job, because it was very hard, and it was not something very appealing at the time.
When did it become apparent to you that maybe you should look back home or go back home?
Actually, I realized that quite late, at the age of 35, when I was, looking for some meaning in my life. And I realized that there was a family story and quite interesting activity to make wine and to enjoy nature. So I decided to join my brother, who took over before me. It's a big adventure to make wine and to make a link between people, because wine is a link between people, and money split people away from each other.
Bernard Dusseigneur, and he is here for the annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. Would you say that your name on the bottle, your family name on the bottle, was a good thing, or did it make you walk very carefully because it's your name?
The name, actually, Domaine Dusseigneur, it's a nice name for an estate in French. And actually, it's not a question I ask myself. I'm very proud to have my name on the bottle. But also, yes, I guess it implies certain responsibilities.
It's a family.
It's a family.
Generations.
Exactly. It's something that can pass over in my time to my children.
We're speaking with Bernard Dusseigneur from Domaine Dusseigneur in Châteauneuf-du-Pape. Can I throw a couple of quotes at you that you've said that really caught my eye? To be a wine grower is to be a part of history.
Yeah,
that's exactly. A big that's a big subject.
Yeah, it's a long history that started in South France with the Romans and sometimes before the Romans. So it's a 20 centuries time history. So it's a long legacy also that you you take over this heritage.
Yeah.
And in your short life, you have to understand this know-how and also this history, and to pass on it on to your successors.
You're a caretaker.
Yes, exactly. You have to pass on something in a good shape, in a good state, during your lifetime, in your time, you try not to spoil everything, and to express the best you can from the land.
And actually, each bottle, especially the reds, each bottle is in its own way is a part of history. If you bottle something in 1960 or 70 or 80 or 90 or whatever, it captures that year.
Yeah, exactly. It captures it's a part of history. That's the magic of it. And also, the bottle of vintage doesn't show itself sometimes in its earlier ages. It takes time to express. And time is a very essential part of the terroir because you need to have old vines to get to the soil, to express the minerality. You have to have a very deep root system, and then once you have the grapes, you have to also to take time to make a terroir driven wine in the cellar. It takes time to age in the barrel, sometimes 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And then once it's bottled, also you need to add some time in the cellar so the wine can express fully.
And your vines are 50 to 100 and...
Yes, very old, very old.
150, 130?
Yeah, 135 years old, which are probably the oldest of the area. They are of course, post-phylloxeric. The phylloxera is an insect that destroyed all the European vineyards in the late 19th century. And the vines are very, vineyards are quite old.
I have another quote for you, Bernard. Through wine, nature offers us a sublime and unique opportunity to create and share emotions. Through wine, nature offers us a sublime. So how's nature doing in this day and age? Is nature coming through for you? Because some of the nature...
Nature is of all the capital element. It's also a random element, so you don't control everything. Every year is different, and you have to adapt yourself to new conditions. And sometimes you can shape the wine the way you want it to be. Sometimes you have to do what you can because the climate conditions are very, very extreme. So you do what you can.
And they're changing now.
And they're changing every year. So
you're harvesting earlier.
Yeah. We on a 30-year basis, the average date of the picking had been brought back by 1 month, which is huge. And for instance, in 2017, we started picking the red grapes. On August 16, which is the all-time record. And so it goes to show that we are picking earlier, every year. Yeah.
We're speaking with Bernard Dusignier from Domaine Dusignier in Châteauneuf-du-Pape. What have you brought to pour? What are you showcasing this year in Vancouver?
I think we're going to taste this Châteauneuf 2017 red. And also a couple of more cuvées, more confidential, that I've brought for the festival. Some are the 16 vintage, which is one of the best vintage of the decade in the south of France. And some of the wines that I'm not from Châteauneuf-du-Pape, that I've also produced. So a lot of fun to discover.
Did you bring some Caterina?
Yes, Caterina is a main cuvée in Château du Pape. We have it in white and in red.
You were at one time, you were probably the only vineyard in the area that was organic and then biodynamic. Are you surrounded by, are you seeing much more of that in the area?
Yes, there's quite a large amount of vineyards that are organically farmed in Châteauneuf. I think it's 25% now, which is much higher than the national average. Biodynamic farming is another step further. I think we are only five or six vineyards in Châteauneuf that are certified biodynamic. Yes.
Tasting Room Radio. He is Bernard Dusenier from Domaine Dusenier, Châteauneuf du Pape. The other quote that came to mind was, you were talking about teamwork, what it takes to actually create these wines. Mm. And you were talking about humility.
Yes.
Tell me about humility and winemaking.
Well, that's my philosophy of working, and I put the for me the identity of the wine comes from the soil and the grapes, and not from the winemaker. So I very often talked about a cook, a French cook. They for instance tends to be sometimes the man who creates everything.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that the quality of a dish comes from the products before the cook. So I put that's my philosophy of working, and I put forward the quality of the grapes before the talent of the winemaker. That's why. I call it humility.
Do you have any connection to the Canadian wine industry?
Not yet, but I hope I will make some this week.
Right. Here we are, 2020. How long do you want to do this before perhaps you hand off to your son?
Well, it depends about them, actually. I'm not going to retire. It's not a job that you retire from, actually. It's more the life adventure. So as long as I'm in good health, I will continue.
What kind of a life is it? What kind of a life is it that you live?
Yeah, well, I'm staying in a beautiful hotel and having fun with nice people around a glass of wine. So it's not a bad life.
Do you have any concerns about the future of the French wine industry?
No, I think we're facing some changes, but it's not the first time in the wine history that it happens. And I think we have a lot of strategy to adapt ourselves to the change. What the difference between other periods is probably the how fast it is changing right now. So, but I'm quite confident we'll find a way to continue this big adventure.
For those people in the audience, they want to be able to say the name correctly, and they want to hear you say it so that we understand how the tongue gets wrapped around the teeth.
So it's Dusenier, with the French accent.
Dusenier. There's a little air in there as well. There's a little air comes with it.
Yeah, Dusenier.
Dusenier. Thank you, Bernard. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Raymond.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by two new sponsors. The award-winning Orofino Vineyards. Check out their Passion Pit wines. And Orofino Vineyard Suites, voted best in the Similkameen Valley. And the Similkameen Valley's new Row 14 restaurant at Clippers. Not just raising the bar in cost and cuisine, it's defining it. It's also the home of Untangled Cidery and Clippers Guest Suites. You can find them online at row14.ca and orofinovineyards.com.